This is a Suno India production and you're listening to the Suno India Show.
The cabinet has now approved a bill to repeal the three farm laws in the upcoming winter session. In our previous episode on the farm laws being repealed, we spoke to a farm leader who said that the protest will continue for a minimum support price guarantee for farmers. And we can see that happening on the ground right now. Today we will get an expert view on why the laws are being repealed and what's in store for the future of farmers. Hi, I am Surya Tapa Mukherjee reporting for this episode of the Suno India Show. I spoke to Surinder S. Jodhka, an author and a sociology professor at Jawaharlal Nehru University. Just a reminder, the three laws in question are the Farmers Produce Trade and Commerce Act, the Farmers Agreement of Price Assurance and Farm Services Act, and the Essential Commodities Act. The protesting farmers said that the new laws make the minimum support price system irrelevant by allowing private traders to negotiate prices with farmers, and they would not have any assured income from their farming. On the morning of November 19, the day of Guru Nanak Jayanti, Prime Minister Narendra Modi made the announcement to repeal the laws.
आज मैं आपको पूरे देश को ये बताने आया हूँ कि हमने तीन कृषि कानूनों को वापस लेने का रिपील करने का निर्णय लिया है। इस महीने के अंत में शुरू होने जा रहे संसद सत्र में इसी महीने में हम तीनों कृषि कानूनों को रिपील करने की संवैधानिक प्रक्रिया को पूरा कर देंगे।
What do you think? Why did the Prime Minister repeal the farm laws?
I don't know, but obviously the reason is politics. It's all about politics. There could be other reasons as well, but that obviously is the reason. I mean, UP elections, politicians could not even come out of their house, leave aside. In Haryana, you have seen Chief Minister is not allowed to address any kind of gathering.
In Uttar Pradesh, perhaps the most shocking incident was the one at Lakhimpur Kheri, where protesting farmers were mowed down allegedly by a car belonging to the son of UP Home Minister Ajay Mishra.
संजय सिंह ने लखीमपुर में किसानों पर कार चढ़ाने का एक हैरत अंगेज वीडियो ट्वीट किया है। इसमें किसानों को पीछे से टक्कर मारती कार दिख रही है। हालांकि आज तक
लखीमपुर खीरी में किसान आंदोलन के दौरान हुई हिंसा में 8 लोगों की मौत हुई है, लेकिन इन मौतों का जिम्मेदार कौन है? क्या बीजेपी के आरोपी नेता घटना के जिम्मेदार है या फिर किसानों के बीच घुसे कुछ?
दिस लेंट फर्दर स्टीम टू द प्रोटेस्ट ऑफ फार्मर्स इन उत्तर प्रदेश. In Haryana, also a BJP state, Chief Minister Manohar Lal Khattar was not welcome anywhere. Protesting farmers would surround his car to not let him get down and even storm the helipad to not let his helicopter land.
Farmers gheraud Haryana Chief Minister's vehicle. They showed him black flags, and this amidst, of course, the protests of the farmers over the new farm law.
Dramatic scenes were witnessed in Haryana's Karnal after hundreds of agitating protesters stormed the rally spot, vandalizing the dais from which Chief Minister Manohar Lal Khattar was meant to speak on the benefits of farm laws.
So they realized that instead of losing steam, was perhaps getting bigger and bigger by the day, and made their calculation. I mean, they are political parties, of course, and that should matter. That's why elections are so critical. So I think it was all because of elections and politics, which makes sense. It's not like there's anything immoral about it. That's how democracies function. We should have seen this announcement long time back, that in democracy, elections are not the only measure of your success. Social movement, civil society has its own value. And this movement had, shown that it represents a large section of farmers, at least from north and northwestern, which itself is quite substantial, and the kind of solidarity they had shown, the kind of resilience they had shown, which was very evident. If it was just a kind of politically manipulated, misguided set of farmers, that would have fizzled out in 1 or 2 weeks. Establishment political party, they know this, they knew this already. But somehow, kind of, you know, they did not respond. They decided maybe the reforms are more critical, and I think that was perhaps, you know, weighing on their mind, or you know, perhaps just lack of experience of being in power or whatever it was. But I personally feel it should have happened, and it could have happened much before.
The uprising of farmers was not equal in every state. However, the stronger protests were in states that are politically significant right now.
Going to be in Uttar Pradesh and Punjab, and UP is perhaps the most important state for any political party or at the national level. And at the same time, the other point that you were making, that you know, movements have been confined, which is empirically true. And agriculture is not only constitutionally a state subject, but it's also a regional economic process. You know, every region has its own issues, every region has its own cropping pattern, every region's political processes and their connection with agriculture in terms of, you know, social class and strength vary significantly. So in regions where, for example, in Bihar, there are lots of people in rural areas, nearly 90%, 87-88%. But agriculture as a constituency, there are not very many big farmers, people who have small holdings. They don't really work only on agriculture. They go out, local dynamics, and that needs to be taken into account.
I mean, maybe it's too early to tell, but what impact do you see of this on the actual elections now?
It will be easier for BJP to handle opposition, right? Definitely is going to, for example, in Punjab, they would certainly be able to contest elections. They would perhaps go along with them who is forming a new party. If the repeal had not happened, it would have been impossible for BJP to even contest elections, or even for anyone else to effectively participate in elections. In UP, things would be easier for BJP, certainly. Easier is the word. I mean, it's not anyway easy thing to election, but they would be able to go back and say that, look, don't talk about it. Let's talk about other issues. And you can go into the promise mode. Now you would say, yeah, elect us and we will take care of your demands. We'll pursue these demands and these have been met. So it would come into that kind of, you know, they would be in the game. Without this, they would not even be in the game.
This was, of course, not the first protest by farmers in India. The agriculture sector has been doing so badly for so long that suicides of farmers have become a new normal. So now that the three controversial laws will be repealed, does it mean we will go back to ignoring the larger crisis in the industry? Jyotka says the attention we are giving to farmers won't go away anytime soon.
I personally think it won't go away, because it had gone away. Agriculture used to be, at some level, a very significant sector of economy until around early 1990s. And with new liberal reforms, the kind of growth trajectory India has had in the last 30 years, significantly marginalized agriculture in economic calculations of the country. A significant rise of urban middle classes, but more importantly, their influence in national politics. Their numbers also increased because India became more urbanized. And this urban, sensibility also went beyond the urban population. So people were more, in some sense, excited about being part of the urban economy. And this decline at some level was also always... farmers were committing suicide. There was general sense of desperation in rural areas. Villages were kind of, you know, beginning to look hopeless places in different parts of the country. But there was no political agency. And I think this has been an important reminder to the Indian state and Indian society that agriculture still remains a very important sector, not only of economy, but importantly of society. Because it absorbs the largest proportion of India's what we call as the main work it still employs something like 40%, even if it is 30%. That's a very, very large number. There's no other sector of economy. So, like, you know, there's an economist in Oxford, Barbara Harris-White, she says agriculture functions like a sponge. So it can absorb all the surplus population. And in COVID, we saw people could go back home. They could go back home and they had something to fall back upon. Go back to their half an acre of land or 2 acres of land. And that is a very significant resource that India has. So as a society, we need to strengthen those kinds of economic sites so that the people are occupied. They are occupied meaningfully and with some sense of dignity. So agriculture does give them a sense of dignity. And even when you have 2 acres of land, you call yourself a farmer. That gives you a different kind of, you know, and for example, Kerala had land reform. So everybody has small plots of land. Not everybody, but so that also is very clearly connected with the lower poverty levels. Right. So these are kind of very important processes. So we need to keep thinking about land, keep thinking about agriculture, keep thinking about rural areas, keep thinking about the realities of Indian economy. The fact that, you know, so-called corporate economy is not producing jobs. So how do you produce jobs? We need to put jobs on agenda so that people have some kind of dignified livelihood, stable livelihood. And that would strengthen everyone. That would expand markets for all kinds of things. So that's why these minimum incomes kind of programs are very, very crucial and they ought to be pursued. And in that sense, what farmers are asking for, price security for their crops, should not be seen simply in terms of their demand of providing them assured livelihood. This is one way through which you can ensure that they earn what's called as the minimum subsistence income.
We have heard a lot about how the farmers' protests were bringing down social barriers of caste, gender, religion, class, etc. After a year of gatherings that brought people of varied identities together, what would the end of this protest mean?
See, in context of rural Punjab and to some extent rural Haryana, at some level, biggest turning point was caste-class differences. Until now, the dominant communities or farming communities, they represented everyone. If you look at the narratives of farmers' movement in 1980s, there was very clear, for example, this chap, Joshi, had framed this binary of Bharat versus India. And Bharat is rural India, which is exploitative and it exploits Bharat. And Bharat was represented by the Marathas, by the dominant agrarian caste communities. And they said rural was homogeneous and everyone in rural was one single category. So that kind of populist narrative has been abandoned. Rural is divided on caste lines. Rural is divided on class lines. That's why Kisan Mazdoor Ekta, which became one of the major slogans of the farmers' movement, and they were celebrating Ambedkar's birth anniversary, Guru Ravidas, kind of icons, even Bursa Munda. And so there is a new kind of what I would call as sensibility, which this movement has given to agrarian communities and civil society. I think this has been a very, very significant, what one should say, happening. The fact that it happened, people started to come and they sat and they endured vagaries of weather. They suffered, but still they remained in what in Punjabi we call as Chardi Kala. That they were beat up, looking up, and they were not really discouraged by that. And I think that is something which shows energy of social movements and of quote unquote Indian people. And this goes hopefully back to the village. And in the village, for example, this has been a year of schooling for all those farmers who were staying here. They read so much, libraries, there were this trolley times, local newspaper, people were writing, people were reading. So I think this education, democratic cultures, that they have to struggle for their rights, and they have certain rights which are given to them by Indian constitution, and they are citizens of this country, and they also deserve some attention. and the state is not there as the patriarch, as the ruler, but as somebody who have been elected by the people, and it would start different kinds of discussions and debates and different kinds of solidarities, recognition of gender, for example. You know, Negrarian societies, Punjabi society, these are not issues that anybody would ever talk about. But for the first time, it was talked about, and it was publicly demonstrated. And then men are cooking chapatis, and women are raising slogans. They are acting as leaders. And these, obviously, then these are issues which are going back to home. It's not like it would end here. Then, more importantly, perhaps different kinds of solidarities, right? You know, new kind of, you know, relations between people from UP and Haryana and Punjab. So these kind of schism, which had become available to politicians for, therefore, you know, use, they are no longer available. I think that makes a lot of difference to everyone.
The role of religion has been interesting to witness in all of this. The Sikh presence in the protest has led to a range of reactions. From accusations of the farmers' protest actually being a cover for Khalistani infiltration.
दुनिया के लिए एक ऐसा अद्भुत आइडिया लेकर आए हैं जिससे भारत में पिछले 77 दिनों से चल रहा किसान आंदोलन समाप्त हो जाएगा और खालिस्तान नाम का एक अलग राष्ट्र बनाने की मांग भी पूरी हो जाएगी.
Modi government's decision to repeal the three farm laws, Kangna Ranaut took to microblogging platform Instagram saying that Khalistanis have arm-twisted the government.
To the Prime Minister announcing the repeal on the birth anniversary of Guru Nanak.
मैं गुरु गोविंद सिंह जी की भावना में अपनी बात समाप्त करूंगा. देही शिवावर मोहे इहे शुभ कर्मन ते कभू न टरो. हे देवी, मुझे ये वर दीजिए कि मैं शुभ कर्म करने से कभी पीछे ना हटूं.
In fact, some experts have said that the repeal was announced because the Hindutva government cannot afford to alienate Sikhs like they could afford to alienate Muslims during the CAA protests.
So I think there is ambiguity when we think of they being branded as Khalistanis, or so that's a political labeling. So BJP is in its, or RSS in its official stance also has never taken an anti-Sikh position, right? For them, Guru Gobind Singh is one of their heroes. The Prime Minister Modi had gone to last year on Guru Tegh Bahadur's birth, he had gone to Shaheed Ganj Gurdwara. So there has been, you know, that is a political culture in the forefront of this political establishment. So what one should say, the polarization politics is always seen as useful, which the farmers' movement leaders, they did not give in to it, and they continued to underline the point about inclusivity. If somebody can do Hindutva, they can also do their own identity issues and identity politics. They handled it very smartly, and they predicted it also, and that's how they escaped getting trapped into the politics of polarization. When Lakhimpur Khedi happened, Takayat was very smart in working out a kind of compromise and putting demands, and then involving farmers leaders from Punjab, because these were Sikh farmers. These are very mature leaders. I think that's what you should realize, that credit goes to leadership to have escaped this kind of polarization.
Sikhs have played an important role in carrying on this year-long protest. And in fact, the participation was visible and crucial during the CAA protest too, and even during the COVID crisis. Surinder explores some of the reasons the Sikh community is able to persevere in times of struggle.
It's a very, very important point. And if you look at the number of people who died, nearly 70%, I think, of them are from Punjab, and they are mostly Sikhs, who also supported financially. You know, the money came from diaspora in Punjab and their physical participation. They also had gurudwaras. So one should not look at religion simply in communal terms we are used to. I think this was the strongest cultural resource that mobilized and deployed. So they very self-consciously realized and recognized that we would need more than our class identity of being farmers. And in case of Punjab, Sikhi was something which they thought would be very useful, in the sense that there is a lot of resource which is used for struggle. Shahidi is a big kind of, you know, political action. Shahadat is much more than simply sacrificing for something. It's also a kind of moment of self-realization. And that Chardi Kala, that we will be always upbeat and we will not give up. Sarbada Pala, that we are not really sectarian. We are not asking for our own personal interests. Institutions of Langar. If Langar was not there, this movement would not have been able to sustain itself. And who was running the Langar? On the name of Langar, they were able to, from diaspora, from internal Sikh institutions. But also it's inspired so many people. I mean, people who were most impressed by the fact that, you know, these what I call as townships of protest did not generate any kind of local opposition. See, if you go to Singhu border till almost Sonipat, everything is frozen. I think people have occupied the road. They have to spend 2 hours extra to reach and 2 hours extra to reach back. But they still did not come out openly opposing their being there. Right. So there was some cultural connect that they were able to establish through these institutions, that you're welcome to come and eat, you're welcome to come and be part of it. And this is something which I think right from the beginning, a very positive kind of self-image and image of the farmers' movement. It was Sikhi, and the kind of crisis that you had during pandemic time and later oxygen langars. There are langars happening in Argentina, there are langars happening in Latin America and different places. So there was something that I think was a moment of resurgence, and some of these Sikh institutions came very handy at that moment. And I think farmers obviously were at the forefront of bringing this to the national stage and to the larger kind of global stage. Khalsa, for example, the second wave of COVID stuck. There were other Sikh institutions which were providing all kinds of help, providing space to doctors and nurses in gurudwaras, to oxygen, to picking up dead bodies. So I think that is something which the Sikh community feels very proud about. And that's a positive thinking, by serving others, by building a kind of social trust. And I think India as a society needs a lot of it, needs a lot of kind of, you know, solidarity in order to survive in urban context.
Please rate our podcast and leave a comment if you like it. Underreported and underrepresented stories can become mainstream only if it reaches more people. So please support us by visiting our contributing page on our website, sunoindia.in, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.